Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us, caring about your world, doing the next right and honorable thing. We're so glad to have James Corbett join us today. TheCorbettReport.com. If you want to go to a website and a place to support who is doing the next right and honorable thing, TheCorbettReport.com. I want to get to, by the way, he has been working 18 hours a day on something, and I want to know, and I want him to tell you what could be so important that he would be spending 18 hours a day on. We're going to get to that in just a few minutes. However, before we do that, I promised you that we would ask him what he thinks about what's happening at Fukushima and also the largest Austrian bank crash. James, thank you so much for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on here talking to you, Joyce.
Well, we thank you for your diversity of information, for sure. Let's talk about this Fukushima report. Reactor 5 has a major problem that we may hear lots of bad things from in about the 15th or 16th of this month. What do you know is happening from your perspective in Japan?
Well, what we do know is, again, the few details that have come out because of the TEPCO official report on what's going on there, which is that somehow or other, 1,300 liters of water have leaked from a cooling system at Reactor Unit 5. And this is, I mean, this is worrying, of course, because as that report that you were reading from in the last hour talked about, this is going to, within 9 days, if this is left unchecked, at the current rate of temperature increase in Reactor 5, it's going to cross that threshold of 65 degrees Celsius that is a sort of a warning sign for unsafe overheating of the reactor. So that's obviously worrying in and of itself. But I think what's really worrying about this in an overall sense is that Reactor 5 and Reactor 6, for people who don't know, of course, Fukushima Daiichi is a nuclear power plant that contains six reactors. And Reactors 1, 2, and 3 were completely melted down during the accident. Reactor 4 was destabilized and was the containment building was listing, which was a problem because of the spent fuel in the spent fuel pool. But Reactor 5 and 6, we've always been told, were in complete shutdown at the time. They were undergoing maintenance at the time, so they were not armed, fueled, you know, they weren't actually operating. So they're in complete mothball shutdown. And yet, somehow, the coolant, the stabilizing cooling system is leaking, and a 3 millimeter diameter hole, they're saying, near a flow valve. How did this possibly happen? Surely they're not using groundwater or corrosive, you know, salt water to try to cool Unit 5. Surely they have that cooling system completely under control. So why is it suddenly leaking? That, to me, is particularly worrying because of what it says about the site in general and what it could mean about the deterioration of Unit 6 as well. I mean, is anyone checking on that? Because maybe that's in danger as well. Again, mm-hmm. I don't understand why or how this is happening. There's been absolutely no indication that there was anything like this happening at the plant before, so this seems to really be out of left field, and I mean, I don't know at this point whether or not they're going to be able to contain. I mean, if it's a 3 millimeter diameter hole and there's no particular radioactive concern at Unit 5, then I don't see why they wouldn't be able to discover that hole and hopefully do something about that in the next 9 days. But still, what it says about just the overall site itself and the way it's deteriorating is really worrying.
Well, if they had a 3 millimeter hole, you know, if I were running TEPCO or if I were giving out the recommendations or the orders or whatever, I would say, hey, fix the 3 millimeter hole. Let's be done with it. And don't upset the people with this. But obviously, they're giving them the "we're dropping one more shoe all the time" scenario, because it appears that they're trying to sort of almost dialogue to a consensus that this thing is so bad, and they're giving everybody just a little bit of bad news all along. That's the way it appears to me, because, I mean, they set a scenario here now that where, you know, and then the so-called ice wall isn't working as well as we thought it would. Are you kidding me? And you actually thought it would work? I mean, people who aren't even engineers don't need to, you know, think that one through.
No, I think you're quite right about that. I mean, it certainly is this drip drop of bad news that comes out, just spaced out just enough that people probably forget about the last bit of bad news that came out, so that the next one perhaps doesn't have the effect that it would if it all came out at once. I think you're right about that. And certainly if if that is the case, I mean, if the information is being managed, and there's every reason to believe that TEPCO is carefully managing what information comes out of there on a daily basis. So I think there's certainly that possibility that they're just trying to space it out just so that it maintains in people's consciousness, but not to the point, not to the point where there's going to be that kind of widespread panic that there otherwise would be if all of this news came at once. And yes, the ice wall story and the fact that that experiment, which is what it is, really isn't working, again, shouldn't really surprise us, but nonetheless, there it is.
Yep, that's exactly right. Let me move. So we know, I mean, how is Japan dealing with this story? I mean, we know how RT is dealing with it, which probably is a little bit more information maybe than you've gotten. I don't know. But how are they interpreting this, or how is the media in Japan helping you all to digest this information?
Well, to be honest, I'm looking at NHK English right now. And it's that the headline is "No prospect to resume cooling number 5 fuel pool." The operator of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant says it has no idea when it can resume the cooling system for one of the spent fuel pools. So that, I mean, again, that's kind of reported. That's on a special section of the NHK World site called Nuclear Watch, where they cover what's happening at Fukushima. But the top story, that isn't even the top story right now. The top story is emergency warning issued for Typhoon Niyoguri, which apparently is a typhoon that is now bearing down on Japan and is expected to potentially pass over the Fukushima region in the coming days.
So, oh my gosh.
We will see.
Are you kidding me?
No, we'll see. This is it's a bit early for typhoons, but I guess we're coming into that season, and it's happened a few times over the past few years that typhoons have basically passed over the Fukushima site. So, I mean, this is a typhoon-prone, earthquake-prone, and volcanic country. There's a lot of different disasters that happen here on a regular basis, but of course it always is particularly hair-raising when it's talking about the Fukushima region.
Let me just give you FukushimaUpdate.com. That is James's incredible work that he's put together, FukushimaUpdate.com. Check it out to get the latest information. I think the way the U.S. is handling it is, of course, see no evil, hear no evil, you know, speak no evil. So it's not being reported here at all, except for something like RT or the alternative media that's talking about it. People don't even know Fukushima still has a problem. Seriously, right. If you go to... Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, and again, that's a specific government policy that's been enacted since day one. We now know that a few months ago, some FOIA documents came out that showed that the Nuclear Regulatory Agency there in the United States was deliberately not telling everything they knew about what was going on at Fukushima to the public because they didn't want to worry the public. Again, they were deliberately holding back information about what was going on at the site, which, again, shouldn't come as a surprise because, of course, they were holding back the big... All three reactors melted down. They held that back for months before they let the public know about that. So, so it shouldn't be a surprise that they were deliberately holding back information.
Absolutely. All right, let's move away from that. But we are going to be watching that 15th or 16th of this month. We should be knowing what's happening. And now, are you on, let's see, is it July 7th there? Or are you into the 8th? You're almost into the 8th, aren't you?
Just a couple hours away.
A couple of hours from the 8th. So we're looking at 15, 16 time frame for this to take place then. If it's going to blow, I mean, which is essentially what it says. You know, we've lost all this water. It's going into the ocean. It's going into the ground. It's seeping everywhere. We can't control it. And the temperature's going up. So we are in a world of hurt. But they're not putting that part on it. It's kind of like, oh, well, we'll find out what other phony excuse we can give you later on that we're going to try and make it look like we're going to do something. All right, let's move away from that because I don't know that there's anything we can do about that. Certainly there isn't as individuals. The largest Austrian bank crashed after revealing 40% surge in bad debt provisions. What happened here in this Austrian bank?
Well, I mean, the really interesting part of this story is what happened shortly before suddenly the Austrian bank started announcing all these bad debts that they were going to have to start writing down. And that was actually the Hungarian parliament actually passed a new law, which would force banks to refund borrowers on charges deemed unfair on as much as $28 billion in outstanding loans. So this was a new law about unfair banking practices, unfair loan fees that went into or didn't go into effect yet, but it was passed by the Hungarian parliament. And lo and behold, right away, the European, the Austrian banks suddenly started, several of them, including some of the biggest in Austria, Erste Bank, Group Bank AG, Raiffeisen Bank International, UniCredit Bank Austria. They all announced suddenly that they have billions of dollars in bad debts that they're going to have to write down. So they're going to have to use $44 billion of their $60 billion in profits since 2008, almost two-thirds of all the profit they've made since 2008 to cover these bad debt provisions. So, of course, now the banks are trying to call foul and say, well, Hungary, you can't pass that kind of loan refund law. That's going to threaten investor confidence in the banks, and it's going to shake the banking industry. So basically what the banks are doing, once again, like we've seen so many times, and like we've seen in the United States over the past several years, so this should be no surprise to Americans, that the banks are basically holding a gun to the head of the economy and saying, you can't pass laws to make us be fair or ethical or to actually treat our customers well, because that will threaten the banking system, and you don't want that to happen, do you? So, of course, we saw Eurostoxx banks basically plunging in the days after this announcement. So, once again, I mean, basically the European economy is being held hostage at gunpoint by the banks.
Okay. You know, economics are something that are really boring to most people. They don't care about it. And I love what you said at your website in helping people to understand what the Federal Reserve is all about. And by the way, if you go to CorbettReport.com/Federal Reserve, we're going to talk about that when we come back. I love this quote here. So if you're planning a family, you'd want to know where babies come from. Well, this is a lot like banking. So let me ask you, where does money come from? We'll be back after this 4-minute break with James Corbett. Stay tuned to the Power Hour, CorbettReport.com/Federal Reserve. Let's get us an education. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Joyce Riley and James Corbett. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. James Corbett is our guest today, 24 minutes after the hour. We're going to talk about the Federal Reserve. I like that. You want to know where babies come from? Well, we want to know where money comes from. And real quickly, James, I got a phone call from a gentleman who runs a barbecue place here in Versailles. Now, that's not really all that earth-shattering, except for he said, wow, I found out the Power Hour's here, and I've been listening to the Power Hour, and he has this little barbecue place that is like the best barbecue in the world. And he said, I just want to let you know, I'm such a fan of Austrian economics. He says, I study everything I can learn about Austrian economics. I said, Gilbert, you're the only person in Versailles who knows what Austrian economics is other than me. I said, that is amazing. But, you know, to find out that there are people out there that are really becoming interested in the subject, such as Federal Reserve and or where money comes from, I commend you for doing this documentary. But let me ask you, why is it so important? Because there's been other documentaries on the Federal Reserve. Why is it so important that you've been spending 18 hours a day on this documentary? What is it we're going to learn from this?
Well, I mean, that's really a tall order, and I guess I'll have to go through my bashfulness in order to answer that. But basically, I mean, I'm well aware that there are some excellent documentaries out there that have preceded me, so it is a bit presumptuous of me to think that I'm going to add something to this mix. And especially when I myself, one of the first documentaries that I saw that really woke me up to the bigger system of what's going on in the world was The Money Masters, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners will be familiar with. It's a 3-hour, very in-depth, very detailed documentary about the history of banking, central banking in the United States specifically, and in the world generally. But it goes into so much detail, and I learned so much from that that documentary probably about 7 or 8 years ago now when I first saw it. That set me along the path that I'm on. So it is a bit presumptuous of me to think that I'm going to contribute something more than what was really indicated in that documentary. But if anything,
I think you're being humble, and knowing your style, absolutely, there's going to be a lot you're going to be able to bring to us.
Well, I hope so. And if anything comes of this, I hope it is the idea that I know that a 3-hour, very detailed, very in-depth documentary like The Money Masters is asking a lot of the audience. And I know there are people out there like myself who are very interested in that and actually do want that type of media, but there are probably, I would say, it's safe to say, far more people who are turned off by the idea of watching a 3-hour documentary on economics. So I really set out with the intention to do my absolute best to make a documentary that was watchable somewhere around 90 minutes, that would be watchable and entertaining, but still detailed enough to really impart some information about the Federal Reserve. And again, if I've contributed anything, I would hope that we start to expand a little bit the alternative media's conception of the Federal Reserve and what it is, and sort of go a little bit beyond some of the sort of catchphrases that have caught on in the alternative media. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that certain catchphrases are things that now everybody seems to know. Probably 99% of your audience has heard something like the Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express. That's one of those sayings mm-hmm. that's sort of out there in the alt media and is really caught on. Or the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor has a reserve. That those types of statements are pretty well known. But to actually know about the Federal Reserve System in any depth of detail about how it operates, how it functions, why it's set up the way it is, and how what the sort of official line on what it is, and all of this type of information that kind of gets glossed over, to the extent that even I myself, when I first started into this, I don't think I was surprised by anything that I came across in the research for this, but I think I was humbled to see how much I had still to learn about the Federal Reserve System.
Is that right? Wow. If you have information to learn, then my goodness, we all do. And I really like the title that you put on this. And knowing your style, again, you're going to learn a lot from this, and it's probably going to be presented in such a way that you're going to be able to understand it, ladies and gentlemen, without being really difficult. I can assure you that. Century of Enslavement, the History of the Federal Reserve. That is just pretty powerful. Century of Enslavement.
Well, it is provocative, certainly, and I know some people are turned off by provocative titles like that, but I really don't think that it is a misnomer to call it that. I think that, obviously, I'm not trying to make light of the sort of physical indentured servitude of people in the past, or even that still goes on today, but I am trying to draw the parallel with the fact that our monetary system is absolutely the base of everything that happens in our economy, and thus is a key determinant in our entire lives. The way the economy is structured, the way the money system operates, determines who we are, what we do on a daily basis, how we live our lives. And until we realize we've been engineered into a system that is primarily made for and for the benefit of the banksters, we will never be able to change that.
And against the people, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned. James Corbett, Corbett Report.
A little right, a little left, but always independent-minded. The Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us today. It is 7 July 2014. We're entering a very critical time in this country. People are rising up saying not no, but heck no, and seeing what is happening, not of, by, and for the people, but of, by, and against the people. We have James Corbett joining us today. thecorbettreport.com/Federal Reserve. You can check it out, and please donate. Please support what he is doing, because, you know, we need to support the people that are doing the next right and honorable thing, because that's how we get our information to know what the heck is going on. So please, if you would, support thecorbettreport.com, because this is quite a production he has put together, and I thank him very much for sharing it with us. He does this for the people. Now, we need to support him and say thank you by going to his website, CorbettReport.com. James, now, I guess if I were to ask you any one question regarding the Federal Reserve, it is, why do people need to know this information? I mean, what is the why of all of this? If we can give them the why, what is that going to do for the people?
Well, I think you just touched on it in what you were just saying, where we're in an age of rising, of the people rising up against the forces that have been trying to keep them down for generations and saying not just no, but heck no. And I think for myself, the sort of spine-tingling moment of realization that we were living in a potentially revolutionary age, and I mean truly revolutionary, not just those types of, you know, revolutions that come along every now, the Tea Party or the Occupy movement or things like this that that really become quickly co-opted and part of the system. But I mean something that will truly or potentially truly change the nature of the times that we're living in. For me, that moment was watching back around the time of the rally for the Republic and things of that nature, where you had, you know, tens of thousands of people in completely packing out auditoriums, arenas, and rallying to chant in unison about end the Fed. I mean, to me, that is the sign of a truly revolutionary moment, the potential for a truly revolutionary moment, because it means that people, for the first time in generations, are recognizing that the true root of the problems that we are facing is really the monetary structure itself. People are once again turning to this issue that was truly the lifeblood of American politics for hundreds of years, until 1913, when suddenly the Federal Reserve Act is signed, the Federal Reserve comes into existence, and all of a sudden that entire strain of the American political experience, arguing about the creation of money, who should control the money supply, how money should be created, all of these things which had been so central to the American experience since even before the founding of the country, back in the colonial times, all the way through up to 1913, all of that suddenly erased, and since then it's just been one sort of gloss that we maybe learn a little bit in school about banks, and maybe we hear something about the Federal Reserve being a central bank, but no one ever learns in any detail what this system is, how it functions, how it came into place, why it's structured the way it does, what the way it is, or what possible alternatives there are to this. And so to me, the idea of suddenly this age where we have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people across the country becoming excited and energized by the monetary issue, to me, is such an important thing. And I think we really need to build on this, because unfortunately, in the last few years, we've seen that energy, that momentum that was there in the campaign for liberty being sort of dissipated away. The audit, the Fed movement, and all of these things that were going on a few years ago seem to have frittered away, and people are not really rallying in that same way around this issue. And I really think we need to maintain that momentum and really push it through to its conclusion if we really want to change the way that the country is being run.
I think that's so critical. If we want to change the way the country is being run, one would think that maybe the watching of the planned immigration here of the rogue government bringing in 50 some thousand people, or now they're saying it's up to 200,000 people from South Central America, and saying, oh, gee, they walked across. No, they didn't. But, you know, the planned migration of these people in here, illegal activity, the focusing of all this money and attention on them when they have all these diseases and illnesses, one would think that would be enough. But to understand how your money is being taken from you, I mean, let's say you were going to explain to someone your documentary and give them the bottom line, you know, in 5 minutes, what would you say to the people as to what the Federal Reserve is, and the theft and the creation of money, how this impacts their lives?
The Federal Reserve System is the result of a conspiracy. This is not disputed. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is historical fact. And we know this from the conspirators themselves, one of whom actually wrote an entire article about it in the Saturday Evening Post back in February 1935. Excuse me. And you can find a link to that Saturday Evening Post article in the transcript for this documentary, again, at corbettreport.com/Federal Reserve. Where Frank Vanderlip, one of the conspirators who formed the Federal Reserve, wrote openly about the fact that in 1910, 3 years before the Federal Reserve came into existence, a group of bankers and Senator Nelson Aldrich and A. Piatt Andrew, the Treasury Secretary at the time, got together in complete secrecy and headed to Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia, again, under complete secrecy, and even only using first names the entire weekend or the entire week that they were there on Jekyll Island, so that even their servants wouldn't know who they all were and what they were obviously conspiring about. And the reason that they maintained the secrecy, according to Frank Vanderlip in his own account, is that if the public were to find out that this group of people, this group of bankers, was meeting in secret to draft the legislation that would become the Federal Reserve Act, then the public would absolutely reject it. Their plan would completely fail. Because at that time, specifically at that time in the United States, the public was absolutely outraged with the banking community. There was something at that time that was known as the Money Trust. And this was essentially a group of three banks which controlled the entire American economy. And this was something that, again, was not disputed. This was something that was discovered in a committee called the Pujo Committee that was investigating the Money Trust after something called the Panic of 1907. Again, I go through all of this history in the documentary, but suffice it to say that these bankers used the panic that they created because of these bank collapses that was going on to forward a piece of legislation to, quote-unquote, control their industry, which of course was just the cartelization of their industry. The bankers ended up writing their own rules and regulations, which gave them complete control over the American money supply. That is fundamentally what the Federal Reserve is. It's the power to it regulates and oversees the power to create money in the economy. And of course, the vast majority of money in the American economy is created by private banks that lend to customers at interest. And they do not lend money that they have. They lend money that they create out of thin air by virtue of their charter, which they've been granted to act as banks to create this money. So the banks are creating money owed as debt back to themselves. They control the Federal Reserve, which oversees this entire system and which sets the interest rates, which guides the entire economy of the United States. And fundamentally, although it is a bit of an oversimplification to simply say that the Federal Reserve is a private bank, it's more than just that, but certainly there are 12 regional banks in the Federal Reserve system that are private corporations. Again, that is not a conspiracy theory. That's even admitted by the Federal Reserve's legal counsel, and I have a clip of that in the documentary where they admit that. It is these privately owned private banks with private boards of directors are the key determinants on the Federal Open Market Committee that sets the interest rates that guides the entire economy. And even more than that, these are the same people who sit, these same private bankers sit on the boards of directors of these regional reserve banks that then end up directing trillions of dollars of bailout money back to their own banks in the times of crisis. And that's exactly what a 2011 Government Accountability Office report found, that $4 trillion of the $16 trillion that the GAO investigated of bailout financing in the wake of the 2008 crisis was money that was directed back to the own banks, the banks of the people who were sitting on the boards of these private regional Federal Reserve banks. So it is a cartel system that is designed specifically to benefit the bankers for their own purposes, and is certainly used as a weapon and as a big stick to keep down competition in the economy and to make sure that the bankers completely consolidate control over the economy. And when people realize that, then they can start to understand how this power is being used. And that's, I think, what we touch on in the final part of this documentary, where it shows the bankers and how the same bankers that conspired to create the Federal Reserve ended up conspiring to create the Council on Foreign Relations and try to direct America's foreign policy to create what they call a new world order of complete financial and political control of the entire world. And they are continuing to work towards that and using things like the financial panic of 2008, which they created, to help further their goals of world consolidation. So in order to counteract that, we have to start finding alternatives to the money system that they've created.
Wow. I hope that people will get this, look at it, share it with people that they know. And, you know, perhaps if we can show the umbrella of the crime, the umbrella of the problem as to how they have controlled us, put us into a position of control, you know, then hopefully we can get people to understand that everything is being done is not being done in their favor. It is being done to control them and create more of this control and more of this theft of their property and their monies. Now, how do you explain this to people in Japan that you talk to? I mean, do they understand the U.S. Federal Reserve issue, or is the Japanese Federal Reserve the same thing as what we're seeing here?
Well, yes, the Bank of Japan, of course, like most of the central banks in most of the developed countries, does operate in the interests of the business and banking and political oligarchies rather than in the interests of the people. Each country does have its own slightly own system, and it was set up in a different historical context and has different powers that are enumerated in different ways. But something that I like to return to when I talk about this subject is the fact that we've been led down not a completely wrong alley, but at least one that's not as productive as it could be. When we start talking about the ownership issue, who owns these banks, and there's only three banks in the world, central banks that aren't privately owned, or that sort of thing. I think that is the wrong way of putting it, because it's not ultimately about the ownership issue. Although, certainly, as I say, the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks are private corporations that are owned by the shareholders that are the private banks that make up the Federal Reserve System. So it is a privately owned banking system. But it's not the ownership, it's the control. You used that word before, and I think that is the key word that we have to come back to, is control. Who controls the system, and for what purpose do they control it? And when we put it in that context, we can start to understand that fundamentally this isn't about money. This isn't about pieces of paper, certainly. It's not about those tokens of money that they dangle in front of us and that they make us fight over and kill for, mm-hmm. and all of these things that yes. happen in the name of money, which is literally just something they whip up out of thin air. It's not about the money, it's about the power, it's about the control. And when we start to realize that it's fundamentally about the control, suddenly things that wouldn't make sense start to make sense. Because people might look at something like the banking collapse panic crisis of 2008 and think, why would the banks create that kind of crisis? It's precisely because the crisis is what gives them the mandate to consolidate their control, their power.
Ooh,
they become more
repeat
powerful
that again.
Because of it. Well,
repeat that again. That is so critical.
The panics and the crises allow them to consolidate their power and control over the economy. They may lose money in the process in terms of these useless tokens, which are created out of thin air, but it doesn't really fundamentally matter. As long as they still have that control over the money supply itself, what do they care if their notional value goes up by 6 digits or down by 3 digits or whatever it is? It's just complete funny money. It means nothing. All that it really is tokens of power and control. So that's fundamentally how we have to see these crises and panics that come along. And there was an interesting comment on this documentary, on the YouTube version that I saw recently, where someone said that the panic of 1907, that banking panic I talked about that started the process that started the creation of the Federal Reserve, was a financial false flag. It was a monetary false flag. And that is so true when you actually look at the history of that panic, because it was actually started by J.P. Morgan, who started spreading rumors about some of his competition, the Knickerbocker Trust Company, for example, which was one of the largest financial institutions in the United States at the time. J.P. Morgan starts spreading rumors about them, and suddenly people are panicking, they're rushing to get their money out. The Knickerbocker Trust Company collapses. J.P. Morgan gets to parade as the savior. He gets to be this broker who brokers a deal with to save certain financial institutions. And you know, there's this famous story about him locking a bunch of bankers in a room until they can come to an agreement about, you know, saving the system and all of this. And J.P. Morgan gets ultimately paraded out as some kind of hero for this panic that he created. And then he sends several of his minions out to this Jekyll Island meeting in 1910 to create the Federal Reserve, which completely consolidates and formalizes the power of people like J.P. Morgan over the economy. So the crisis is something that they need in order to consolidate their control. And that's what we saw in 2008, when suddenly the G7 became the G20 and they started talking about the Financial Stability Board and all of these extra controls over the global economy that were going to go in as a result of this. And of course, Gordon Brown saying there at the 2009 London summit, we can see a new world order emerging. Again, the call sign mm-hmm. of this gangster clique. It's like a gang showing their gang signs. They always talk about this new world order that they're lusting after. And that's what it's ultimately about. It's about power and control.
You know, the FTSE, the CAC, the DAX, the Russia 2K, everything is down today, including the Dow, which is down 52 points after going over 17,000. And yet people are thinking that things are so good out there because the Dow being over 17,000. I got a call on the 4th of July from someone who I don't know, but was an insider in the financial arena. And he said, I've got to tell you, it's coming soon. He said, this is worse than we ever imagined in 2008, worse than we could have ever, ever thought would happen. He says, it is getting ready to come down around our shoulders. Now, is it because people are learning what's happening? Is it because they're trying to keep this charade going of 17,000 all as well, keep investing? You know, they're learning now that trades are done in such a way that it favors certain people. I mean, what is the, you know, you are doing this awesome documentary, which I hope children will even watch. I hope you'll share this with your children, especially homeschool children, especially those that are not homeschooled, so that they can understand what's happening. This is going to bring up a lot of questions. It'll bring up a lot of issues that people are not addressing, that they need to be fully aware of, especially those that are investing. And many of those people don't understand how bad the system is, correct?
Unfortunately so. And again, this is not something that we have to speculate about. We can take it at the banker's own word for it. Like we have cited, I think, on this program before, last year you had a top-ranking Bank of England official come out and admit that the central banks of the world have intentionally blown the largest bond bubble in history. And if that sounds scary to you, then you have your head screwed on straight, because large bond bubbles, let alone the largest bond bubble in history, do not tend to end well. And when they pop, yes, lots of people will get hurt. And that's what we're facing.
Yep, that's what he was saying. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. Let's take your phone calls, 855-995-6923. We're talking to our guest today, James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. It'll be in the email blast. You got to see this 90-minute documentary. Got to see this, ladies and gentlemen, so you can explain to others what's happening, probably your local banker even. So let's go to the phone callers, which have lined up here. Sherry in Kansas. Sherry, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with James Corbett.
James, I'm Byron Dale. I've been had a lot of his stuff. And he said that, you know, the bulk of the money is actually created by the little banks. The Federal Reserve sort of controls how much they can lend out. But he also claimed that, and I believe it was the Federal Reserve, for them to create this money, they have to show assets behind it, but of course they can just inflate the value of these assets, and then when they deflate the value, that's when they get in trouble.
Well, there's a couple of different issues there. First of all, the vast majority of money in the economy, as I said, is somewhere over 90%, is money that's created by the banks, the private banks that are in the Federal Reserve System, part of the Federal Reserve System, but they are private banks that are lending out to customers. And when they loan, they are not taking money out of their vault and putting it in your account. They are literally creating money out of thin air in order to do so. So that's true. It is the private banks that create the majority of the money in the economy. And it is the Federal Reserve that oversees and undergirds that system and sets, of course, the reserve requirements of how much money banks have to have in reserve. There's another issue there. The Federal Reserve notes, the actual pieces of paper that most people think of as money, are, of course, issued by the Federal Reserve for the Treasury. And they are supposedly, well, back at the creation of the Federal Reserve, they were backed up primarily by gold. But of course, that is not the case any longer. In fact, the Federal Reserve owns no gold, exactly zero gold anymore, which I go through in the documentary. What they now back it up with is U.S. Treasury securities. So the Federal Reserve has now, I believe, $4 trillion. Now, since the 2008 crisis, they've ran up their total by $3 trillion in terms of what's on their books, on their balance sheet, that is supposedly undergirding this money supply that they have accumulated. And again, it's completely paper wealth. That's ultimately the point of this, is the wealth of the economy, the wealth of the money supply, is really backed up by the people themselves, whether that's you going to your bank and getting a loan, which is really them creating money on the basis of your promise to repay them. So it is your promise that is backing up that money. Or on the other side, the paper money side, it's the promise of the federal government to back up that money, which of course is backed up by your taxes. So ultimately, it is the people who back up the system, but it's also the people who are paying for it to the bankers, literally at interest, for this money that they create out of nothing. So that's the real scam of the system. And it's slightly more complicated than the alt media sometimes portrays it, but it's nonetheless insidious.
Thank you very much, Sherry, for the phone call. We're going to be back after this 1 minute, 10 second break. We've got a final segment coming up. Renee in North Carolina, you're up next with our guest today, James Corbett. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. We'll be right back and check out that documentary. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thanks for joining us. Caring about your world, doing the next right and honorable thing. And that is what our guest has done today, James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. Please check out his documentary on the Federal Reserve and help other people to understand the importance of this. It's not just understanding the documentary, but understanding the ramifications and the importance of this. Let's go to Renee in North Carolina. We've only got like 3 minutes to get three people in. Renee, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
So often we hear the excuse that they don't know. Well, a lot of people who are invested in the system are willfully blind. It's not that they don't know. They don't want to know, and they struggle to make sure they stay that way so they don't have to feel guilty from benefiting from the corrupt system. The ruling elite at the top are a very small number of people, and only with the help of many middle-class and upper-middle-class people in our corporations and government who are keeping the secrets and protecting the top in exchange for a portion of the booty in their paychecks and benefits, that's the glue that holds this system together and will be our biggest obstacle, because they're going to fight to protect it because it enriches them. And to me, this is one of our biggest problems.
You're exactly right. A lot of people know about this. Let me do add this. My father sat on the bank for 20 years, on the board of a bank for 20 years. He and I went around and around over the Federal Reserve is not federal many times, and he did not believe that. And his bank assured him that it was a federal entity, and all the things that I told him, he didn't agree, you know, didn't believe in anything that I said. And also, I always ask him, why is it when you get paid, why is it when you go to the board meetings, they always give you cash? Why is that they pay you in cash to be a board officer? Anyway, your response to what Renee had to say, James?
I couldn't agree more. It is willful blindness on the part of a group of people who I think understand that if they were to question the system, that would question their own positions and their own wealth. And for a perfect example of that I saw today, I saw that this documentary I've done has been posted up on Reddit.com. And there's an interesting discussion there, including some macro economists who are trying to say, oh, I watched 5 minutes of this documentary and it's clearly rubbish and all of this that they're trying to say. It's an entertaining read, so I'll send it to you, Joyce, and you can put it in the email blast for listeners out there.
Send it to Catherine, yes. Oh, awesome. Thank you very much for that. Reddit, that's impressive. Let's go to Bill in Texas. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with James Corbett.
Yes, thanks. I have a question about the Federal Reserve. There's something called the DTCC, Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, that I believe is part of the Federal Reserve. I recently saw something that suggested that shares that I bought through a broker were actually not held in the broker's street name, but were held by the DTCC, and the actual owner is listed as a beneficiary and not as an owner, which I think supposedly contributed to some of the problems that depositors in MF Global had after the collapse in getting their funds back.
I know that you're right about this, and the DTCC is a fascinating thing that I haven't done a lot of direct research on, so I'm going to defer. I wish I could remember. I know there's a researcher that I've seen that did some really groundbreaking work on this. I'm going to have to look that up, and maybe next time I'm on, we can talk about that a little bit more. But as far as I know, that's not Federal Reserve entity. I believe it's a private entity that operates with the U.S. Treasury. But again, I'm going to have to look into that in more detail. It's not specifically something that I cover in the documentary.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill. We have such smart listeners. Let's go to Dave in New York. Dave, you're on the air with our guest today, Bill, James Corbett. We don't have much time. Go ahead, please, Dave.
Good morning. James, I don't have a computer, and I'm wondering if you can supply DVDs to your number one cheerleader, Joyce, so I can get one that way. The other question would be, did Iceland have the blueprint for getting rid of this, or are we just too big to deal with things like Iceland did?
Iceland is an interesting example. I think it'll have to be different in the U.S. because of the size issues, but it is something that at least people can look towards. On the issue of the DVD, it is available as a DVD from my website, so hopefully if you get in touch with Joyce or someone, they can tell you how to get that. It's available as a DVD from my website, and I hope people will get this out and get the documentary.
All right, thank you so much, James. We're out of time. Thank you so very much for having done this. We'll be back.
Thank you.